The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up, Steve Mason, formerly of the Beta Band, talks to us about no longer hiding behind a pseudonym and why all men secretly love pop music. And he'll be playing a live track for us too.
You know, much as probably especially guys like to sit around and think that they really like Can and Noi and stuff like that, really, you don't really sit around unless you're really dull and you've got a lot too much time on your hands.
We'll be discussing Here We Go Magic, Kavinsky and Gayings, if that's how you pronounce it, G-A-Y-N-G-S, Gangs, Gayings, in Singles Club. And your label showing is back. This time, Moshi Moshi Recordings tell us about their label.
I think what we release reflects what we're listening to at any particular time, and it can be house music, it can be folk music, it's just whatever we're listening to and what we like.
That's all in Music Weekly. Welcome back to Music Weekly. The editor of guardian.co.uk/music, Tim Jones.
Hello.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
What have you been doing, Tim?
I have been planning for my wedding, which I might say every time I'm on here.
It's like a soap opera. We've got two parallel plots running. There's Tim's wedding and Rosie learning to drive. And that's what people are tuning in for.
And she's going to smash her car into our church.
Yeah,
she's
going to.
What sort of preparations have you been doing for your wedding?
Well, I've actually taken on the role of graphic designer, even though I have no previous graphic
design. Do you need
skill.
A graphic designer at a wedding? That's slightly de trop.
Well, I had to print out invites and order of service.
Fantastic. That sounds mega. Rosie.
Yes, hi.
How's your driving?
Feels more like a subplot now. She's still not back in the country. So
yeah, as she keeps
hold.
Telling you, oh, this volcano. I can't get back. Sorry. I'll be back sometime after you've learned to drive with someone else.
I hope not, because I've paid her in advance for quite a lot of lessons.
Even worse. She's sat in Mauritius or somewhere like that on your dollar.
Yeah.
Do you think when I'm married and you've passed, no one will bother listening to Music Weekly?
No, it'll
be like it's finished.
It'll be a tumbleweed blowing through the studio. We'll have nothing to talk about. Of course we won't. Our first interview today. Former lead singer of Scottish cult favourites The Beta Band, Steve Mason, releases the first album he's going to put out under his own name on Monday. Mason has had a much publicised battle with depression, and after releasing solo records under the names King Biscuit Time and Black Affair, the new album is produced by hitmaker Richard X of A Freak Like Me, well, the Sugar Babes fame. We'll discuss this new record shortly, but first, Rosie, you met up with him.
I did indeed. He came to the studio.
How was he?
He was on fine form.
Was he?
He was not depressed.
Excellent.
He was very cheerful. We had a very nice chat. And he was a little bit hungover, but battling through it, which I admired.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, this is the first record under his own name. And I wanted to know if there was any significance in using Steve Mason as opposed to the previous pseudonyms.
I think it's kind of maybe an age thing. Where you kind of get to the point where, because like when I was doing the Black Affair thing, which is an electro thing I did a couple of years ago, it got to the point during that kind of period where I had about five or six different MySpaces, all with different names, all different styles of music, all with about sort of five friends. And I just thought, this is absolutely insane, you know? So I just, junked them all. And this album kind of started life as a Black Affair album, and Richard X was going to produce it. Then I woke up one day and decided I was bored with drum machines and synthesizers and all that, and grabbed my guitar, which is the first time I'd really picked it up for about 3 years, and wrote a couple of songs pretty quick. And then it was going to be King Biscuit Time, and then slowly it just sort of dawned on me that I should probably just stand up and be counted for the first time instead of hiding behind all these bizarre names, you know.
Richard X there, who produced the album. Did you start, did you have a view to working with him before you even knew what you wanted to do?
Well, he approached me at a Black Affair show, and he came to a couple of Black Affair shows, and he kind of was quite into that, and obviously thought he could contribute something to that. I mean, I kind of wished I wished he'd produced that album, really. That would have been, that would have been quite exciting. But because after when I sort of decided it wasn't going to be a Black Affair album and it was going to be probably a lot more traditional, if you want, kind of thing with guitars and stuff like that. I didn't think he'd be so interested, but I played him some songs and he really liked them. And I think he liked the idea of doing an album because I suppose he's more known for pop singles and stuff like that. Even in the Beatle Band, I always wanted to work with a proper pop producer because I always thought that would be, you know, a really interesting, a great album because we always had so many ideas.
The appeal of your songwriting is that at the core, I think you've got a real pop sensibility. Is that why you always wanted to work with a pop producer? Did you recognise yourself as a pop artist in any way?
I think I had a bit of an epiphany at one point, and I sort of realised, probably around the Hot Shots 2 album, which is the album that I really wanted to make a very pop album. I can't remember why that didn't happen, but it didn't. I think we decided to try and make it more of a hip hop R&B album. But even that didn't quite work out, but we tried. But I think I had a bit of an epiphany in that I realised that it's pop songs that I really love, whether that's God Save the Queen or whether it's, Junior Mervyn, Police and Thieves or something like that. Though they're all essentially pop songs, really. You know, they've all have choruses and hooks and stuff like that. And, you know, much as, you know, probably especially guys like to sit around and think that they really like Can and Noi and stuff like that. Really, you don't really sit around, unless you're really dull and you've got a lot too much time on your hands, you don't really sit around listening to that. You sit around listening to pop music, well, in whatever form that may take. I sort of realised that slowly, but probably from doing things like the three EPs where it's and the first Beatle Band album, which was just, you know, these never ending songs. Just as you think it's about to end, it goes into a whole other section. Sometimes when I listen back to that stuff, I just think, it makes no sense to me at all.
You and I had a conversation, I think it was after Black Affair, when you talked about some of the tax issues that had come back to bite you from the Beatle Band. And I said, I've got a great idea. Why don't you reunite the Beatle Band and we'll make a documentary about it?
Yeah.
No, bearing in mind, this wasn't that long after the Beatle Band officially split up, so I don't know why I thought, you know.
It was a good idea.
Jumping on, but you were adamant that you didn't want to go back there. And I guess as someone that's a Beatle Band fan, it's always a bit heartbreaking to think that the person that wrote those songs feels that kind of creative distance from them. But is that it,
right,
or is it more
right.
about you don't, you know, you always want to keep going forward?
That's all I ever wanted to do and tried to do in the Beatle Band, and it's all I've ever done since. You know, it's always tried to be moving forward, you know, and trying to do things that I've never done before. Some people think, you know, it's a bit poncy to say that you're an artist, but I've always seen myself more as an artist than a musician. I'm not a great musician in terms of playing and stuff like that, but I always saw the Beatle Band as like a gigantic artistic statement as opposed to like a great rock band. So I think it's really important that you, well, for me anyway, that I keep moving forward, because the idea of, you know, being in a band where you're sort of known for this one sound, for me, I've always had such a massively eclectic taste in music that, you know, I want to try out all those things and see if I can adapt them and put them through my brain and then see what comes out the other end. There's a piece of me inside your face that you cannot think to erase. I lift you up, now I'll find your heart.
Steve Mason cruelly rejecting Rosie's suggestion that she direct a film about him there. Why would he do
What's wrong with him?
I know, it's absolutely insane, isn't it? Where's his blue sky thinking here? Why not let someone who's never directed a film before make a documentary about you? Tell you what, Paul Weller, rang up a mate of mine, another journalist, and this mate of mine had said to him in the interview, oh, you should listen to Tongue or some new folk. And 3 weeks later, gets this phone call from Paul Weller, and Paul Weller goes, yeah, I've been listening to Tongue, yeah, he said, I think I'm going to make an album like that. Do you want to produce it? What? No. You know, I've never, anyway.
Should have said yes.
He should have done. Would have been amazing.
How hard can it be?
He's a fairly disorganised man. It would have been quite funny.
Well, it didn't stop Mick Jones, so.
No. And they're really well-produced records, aren't
exactly
they?
Exactly, beautiful.
Albums. Amazing. It's like Phil Spector. Anyway, Steve Mason with Rosie there. We're having a track recorded especially for Music Weekly at the end of the podcast, so keep it locked, as they used to say on Kiss FM. Restarting his career. I mean, you know, he is a man who's taken a lot of knocks, mostly self-administered, has to be said. But this seems like a real, genuinely does seem like a sort of great new dawn for him, this album, don't you think?
The song that he plays, Boys Outside, which is the title track as well, I said, you know, what's that song actually about? And he said, it's about saying goodbye to the depression and putting that part of my life behind me. And like literally thinking of it as a thing that you can put somewhere else. So if that's the title, you know, if that's the title of the album, then he's obviously very much trying to make it a new dawn.
Mm. It works well, doesn't it? I mean, I'm a confirmed fan of this album. And I haven't really been, I suppose, paid as close attention to his solo stuff as I kind of lost interest in the Beta Band shortly after I interviewed them.
it's a common theme.
Yeah, you meet a lot of people that happen to. But this is a really good record. Tim, are you a fan?
I think it's probably the thing I've liked most, even including the Beta Band's records.
You're mad.
Well,
better than the three EPs.
I think maybe when that came out, there was so much hype around it.
Yeah.
They were kind of built up as this band. I mean, I remember reading Enemy, and they just sounded so fascinating. Even their interviews where they basically said how shit their own music was, was endlessly fascinating. And then I love the idea of them, but it just didn't connect.
It's weird. You sort of forget how huge the Beta Band were. I think there was a point where they were like the most, literally seemed to be the most influential band in Britain in about 1998. When you had like Oasis said they were going to make a Beta Band record, and Radiohead said they were going to, you know, we're supposed to be influenced by them. And never really capitalised on it. Richard X, what do we think Richard X has brought to the table?
I actually think Richard X and Steve Mason / Beta Band share a great deal in common with kind of what I talked about in that interview, their take on pop.
Mm.
I remember reading an interview with Richard X around the time of Girls on Top?
Girls on Top.
You know, where he did the
mashups.
Yeah, mashups with someone else singing, which sounds horrendous, but it was silly.
Oh, they're amazing.
Brilliant.
They're really good examples of that slightly overworked genre, aren't they?
And he sort of described himself in almost revolutionary terms and was very effusive about how he wanted to change the rules of pop, and he wanted to, and it was, you know, and it's quite annoying when people say things like that. But I do think he looks at it from a point of view that you can totally get, and is just so different. And I think the Beta Band always did that, which is why I think it's not uncommon to hear him talking about wanting to work with a pop producer. Then they both obviously have an angle on the traditions of pop.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it's a great album. Boys Outside by Steve Mason is out on Monday. Let's move on to Singles Club, the place where we each nominate a recent release to discuss. And I'd like to start off with Rosie's Choice. I got a mild fascination. At the risk of sounding like my dad, was that at the right speed? It sounds like a record made by the Duracell Bonnie. Rosie, that was Collector by Here We Go Magic.
Yes.
Played at 78 RPM. tell us why you like that.
I like Here We Go Magic because they remind me of Belle and Sebastian.
On 78, yes.
On 78. Well, no, Belle and Sebastian could do Speedy as well.
Yep.
I think it's just as simple as every so often someone actually makes an indie pop album which is has a liberated feel to it, which just doesn't do what you expect.
That's interesting. What do you mean? What do you mean a liberated feel?
Well, I'm loath to use. I guess it's recognisable at the same time as being a bit weird. I'm loath to use the term avant-garde indie pop because I know how much people hate that. But that's something about the approach to it feels very liberated. It's and also the way that this album has been recorded has got a kind of anti-slickness to it, but everything's so tight. It's got a real looped feel to the lyrics and everything like that. So that works really well together. The singer Luke Temple, whose voice I really, really like, never liked his solo stuff. Mm-hmm. And I went back and had another listen to it after I listened to this record to see if I was missing something. And it was just a bit more the maligned genre that we've discussed before. You know, basically Americana.
Folk,
yeah, exactly. And it was it's a little bit like that. It was a little middle of the road. And with Here We Go Magic, he seems to have really found his niche, or the the band have found a niche in each other. So if you like that kind of indie pop, I think it's an excellent record.
Tim?
I think it kind of represents, there's a real kind of regression going on in indie. Mm. It's either people going back to old formats like the cassette tape, or going back, like regressing to their bedrooms.
Or in this case, the 78 RPM sequel.
this is kind of, it's almost like trying to be, you know, so many bands are going back to like this very childish, naive kind of
1986.
Yeah, it's back to the whole kind of, you know, it's just so twee. And I like it as a pop song. It's a little bit tinny and annoying. Mm-hmm. I think you compared it to Belle and Sebastian, and I think that's right in the sound of it. But I always thought Belle and Sebastian had a real anger to them and a bit of, you know, a bit venom.
Of sort of sexy kind of thing. Yeah. Well, not that they were a particularly sexy band, but there was always sort of an undercurrent of broiling lust.
And I think that's what a lot of bands who copy them don't ever get. Mm. They don't kind of manage to catch that. They just want to make a nice song about collecting.
But this song was the single. I think thinking about it in the context of the whole album, I get that a little bit more. Yeah. It actually isn't my favourite single from the album, but it's the one that everyone seems to have picked up on. And it's one they're giving away free, so I thought I'd pick that. But I get what you mean, and I'm the last person in the world that likes twee. But now that you've said it, that's really what it sounds like. So now you've made me hate the record, Tim James.
I think that's my job, I find, as a music journalist. Success again.
I think my aversion to this stuff is probably just down to the fact that I listened to a lot of this music in 1986, and I've got a lot of it already, and you know, it forms an important part of my youth, and I just don't really want to hear stuff like that again, to be honest with you. I think, you know, well, I don't. I mean, you know, I've got all these bands like The Pains of Being Pure at Heart and things like that that just sound like The Shop Assistants or whatever. It's all great and it's all cool, and I can see why I said to somebody a few years ago, if someone these days released a single that sounded like Safety Net by The Shop Assistants, everyone would crap themselves and be hugely excited because it sounds very rough and appealing compared to what passes for indie music these days. And, you know, as usual, I was right. But I just don't particularly want to, you know what I mean, go back to that place. If you do, an MP3 of Collector by Here We Go Magic is available as a free download from the Secretly Canadian website. The new album is out on June the 7th. Now, we can hear Tim's choice. I'm gonna show you where it's dark, but have no fear. That was Night Call by Kavinsky, which is Tim's choice. I really like that. I like the fact that the vocal came in and it suddenly sounded like some of a public information film or something like that. It's a scary voice. Tim, tell us a little bit about Kavinsky.
Well, I don't know too much about Kavinsky.
Don't bother then. All right.
I mean, this is a bit of, he's one of the kind of French house crowd,
right,
along with people like Daft Punk and the like. I mean, this is produced by Daft Punk.
Is it?
got, it's mixed by Sebastian, and it's also got Love Fox doing the chorus.
Wow.
And it's kind of, well, I guess the 80s revival has now gone on so long that we're reviving things from the start of the 80s revival.
Again,
to
yeah,
me,
yeah.
It really sounds quite like How Does It Make You Feel? Or is it, was it called How Does It Make You Feel on this second
Air
album? Third album.
Second album.
So this kind of the creepy voice. I think it's about some kind of psychotic car chase.
I really liked it. It made me think of another French record that we had in on Singles Club some time back called A Real Hero by College, which I brought in. Mm. I sort of really liked it. I didn't think it was kind of too obviously retro. You know what I mean? And its sound. I thought it was good. It sounded sufficiently weird to pique my interest, Rosie. Did it pique your interest?
Did you pique my interest, Rosie?
No, I didn't think you pique my interest, Rosie. What? Did it pique your interest, Rosie?
It did, and then it lost me.
Are you just in a strop because I didn't like that last?
No,
that last
I have my own opinion separate from you. I disagree with you. I think it is a bit too retro.
Really?
To the point where it doesn't have anything necessarily that new about it. I do like Love Fox's contribution, but what it reminded me of was... I presume you pronounce it Jan Hammer, but it's spelled Jan Hammer.
Jan Hammer.
Reminds me of his Miami Vice stuff. If you ever got a free afternoon, my God, go on YouTube and look at, and just Google Jan Hammer.
Because
he's just... Well, you get his original compositions
along with the scenes.
These long establishing shots from Miami Vice and occasionally intercut with him. Really emotionally playing his cork while he's wearing those kind of Miami Vice pastel suits but looking not like someone who would actually be cast in Miami Vice.
So because I ruined your record, you're just going to
what it's all about.
It's also rather nasty in this studio, I have to say. Night Call by Kavinsky is released on the 10th of May. Let's hear my choice, shall we? That was The Gaudy Side of Town by Gangs, I believe it's pronounced. I can't imagine it's actually pronounced like that. Do you ever hear my Gangs? Or Gangs, or however you want to pronounce it. They're a sort of... I mean, one hesitates to say the word supergroup because it's such a... A friend of mine said to me the other day, we were talking about... I had a Britpop compilation, and I went, oh, who were Lodger? And she went, that was Pearl... You know, that's married to Danny. That was her supergroup. It had a bloke out of Delicatessen in it. And I was like, wow, that's stretching the term supergroup to elastic breaking point. This album by Gangs has Bon Iver and people like that playing on it. And it's kind of intended as a weird version of that sort of Magic FM kind of sound. Which I never normally mention it, but I do really like Magic FM. You'd never know. I think it's sufficiently sort of intriguing, weird, kind of off-kilter lo-fi record. It's got an amazing cover of Cry by Godly and Cream on it. It just fits in with the sort of stuff I'm really listening to at the moment. It's like the Aerial Pink single we had in a while back. Rosie, what do you make of it?
I really like this. I didn't know Bon Iver was on it.
I think it's Bon Iver.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sort of those kind of people on it.
People that have been in other successful
bands, people from them bands, you know.
I think Paul Lessers described Gangs as being heavily influenced by 10cc, which may remain one of those untapped 80s influences. 70s influences. But I don't know if you heard it, but in the Mystery Jets, I know that you've heard the Mystery Jets album, they keep saying 10cc.
They're really big fans of 10cc, yeah.
Maybe that kind of soft rock is going to be making more of an appearance. But I did really like it. It reminded me more of something George Michael.
Wow.
Esque.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, a bit of Careless Whisper in the vocals.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
That's really intriguing.
I've heard people say that as well. People have said to me, oh, this sounds just like Careless Whisper, doesn't it?
Right, that's amazing. Do you like it, Tim?
Well, I was thinking, yes, I do. I'd like to be in your gang.
Fantastic. This stuff is pure gold. I sincerely hope this is being archived somewhere on the Guardian website so people in the future can dig it up and ruffle.
I mean, yeah, I kind of just agree with what you said. It sounds like what a lot of the best bands are doing with this soft rock sound and kind of putting it through a kind of more hipster prism. And
it,
in a way you think, well, what is new about this? What is different? But there is something, because it doesn't sound kind of a bit naff. It sounds it sounds dead, you know, off the moment. And at the same time, you can't tell why it's the same. So it's interesting, and there's so much going on with this record, so many different sounds.
It's all over the shop, the album, isn't it? I mean, it sort of chops and changes about fairly dramatically in terms of sound, I think. You can tell I'm a rock critic, can't you? It's a brilliant, incisive stuff like that. The Gaudy Side of Town by Gangs is out now. Time for some posts from last week's show. Guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to visit if you want to leave feedback. SV80 has been back in touch to explain what sort of music chutney... Ah, the chutney mystery. The mystery of chutney is about to be cleared up. We've been baffled ever since SV80 brought it up in the first place. Alexis, he starts, thank you, addressing me personally. Alexis, chutney is a variation of soca based on the combination of traditional Indian instrumentation and faster dance-oriented Caribbean rhythms. The lyrics tend to be humorous and sexually provocative. This record is sexual chutney. alongside soca.
Put that on the front of your album, please.
It's pure sexual chutney. alongside soca and calypso, it's a key part of Trinidad's musical heritage. It keeps threatening to cross over to the UK, but never seems to make it. Minaj's parents are both from the island, an Indo-Trinidadian mother and an Afro-Trinidadian father, or Trinidadian, so the influence of all three styles, however diffuse, might be expected.
Wicked. He knows his stuff, doesn't he?
He knows his chutney. He knows his chutney. Thank you, SV80, that's really good. Cheers, man. Sol writes about the Pete Tong interview last week. The Essential Mix has been a soundtrack to my life from mid-teens when it started right up to present day. Some of the mixes over the years have been phenomenal. If you know where to find them, if you've got pen and paper handy. Future Sound of London from 93, Massive Attack in 94, Portishead in 95, Psychonauts in 96, David Holmes in 97, The Air one mentioned from 1998, Uncle in 02, Too Many DJs in 05, to name but a few. Yes, it's probably not half as relevant today, what with the Interpods, and the Interpods? The Interpod's full of chutney. And the access to vast mixes online, but it still throws up some corkers once in a while. Mastercraft, Toddler T, Flying Lotus spring to mind. It's a national treasure like Marmite and Conkers. EJD writes in, and he says, would it be possible to have a Your Label showing about Jazzman Records, please? Jazzman is the label that reissued that version of I Believe in Miracles that we played the other week. It's very, very good. Everyone should go and buy it. I've been enjoying their reissues for some years now, and they deserve more attention. We'll see what we can do, EJD. Producer Pete is looking into it as we speak. Any other requests for Your Label showing, get in touch and we'll do our best to set them up for you. As ever, keep the feedback coming. We always enjoy hearing from you. Your Label showing is back now. As usual, we've asked a label boss, or joint boss in this case, to take us through the history of their imprint. This time up, it's East London's Moshi Moshi Records.
Michael McClatchy from Moshi Moshi Records, and playing in the background at the moment is Hey Jolie by Suck Patch, which was our first release in October 1998. It was started as a hobby, really. There were three of us who all worked for major labels. Moshi Moshi was an excuse for us to work with the music that we were listening to but didn't fit in with what we were doing for our day jobs. Doing what we did for our jobs, we knew the right people to speak to, we knew the processes that you had to go through to release a record, so yeah, it definitely simplified the whole thing. We spent a long time trying to come up with a name for the label. It was probably the hardest thing we did, to be honest. And after 6 months of toing and froing and coming up with ridiculous ideas and throwing them away, Stephen was trying to track down these two Japanese kids who were street DJs. And he was ringing up their houses in Japan, and when their parents answered the phone, they said Moshi Moshi. And it just stuck with him, and it seemed like the perfect name in many ways, because it doesn't mean anything. It's got no associations. It's just a nice sound, and I think it sticks in people's minds. But it was just a nice sounding phrase. We've never had an agenda for how we wanted Moshi Moshi Records to sound. I'd like to think that we don't have a particular sound. I think what we release reflects what we're listening to at any particular time, and it can be house music, it can be folk music, it's just whatever we're listening to and what we like, and if we think it's good, there's certainly no agenda on how it should sound. Around 2003, I left my job and started doing Moshi Moshi full time, and that coincided quite nicely with us doing a single with Block Party and Hot Chip's first album, and those two releases and us having someone who was concentrating on the label full time turned things around quite a lot and really started to establish us in people's minds. Hot Chip first album, still our biggest selling album. I think our biggest selling single is probably Florence and the Machine. The Drums, they're a band that are causing a bit of a stir at the moment and been one of the tips for 2010. They're a band that we've signed in conjunction with Island Records, but it's still very much a Moshi Moshi release. When we first started the label off, it was a singles label by necessity, really. It was about doing one-off 7-inch releases because that's all we could afford financially and time-wise. As we started to develop and grow as a label, we started to put albums out and we stopped doing the one-off single releases. And then a couple of years back, Stephen and I were talking about it and we realised how much we missed doing the one-off releases. There's something wonderfully instantaneous and genuine about just doing one-off 7-inch releases. You find a band, you like what they do, and 6 weeks later you can have a record in the shop. It's just wonderfully simple. So we decided that we'd like to get back to doing those one-off releases, and that's where the Singles Club came from. It was just an excuse to carry on doing what we used to do and what we used to love, and it's given us a chance to work with a whole load of bands that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to work with, like Friendly Fires or Florence and the Machine or Kate Nash. Just because of the nature of Moshi Moshi and how big we are, we can't afford to sign these people for albums, so we do a 7-inch with them and we get to work with them, and that's great. Caroline's a victim. Caroline. Caroline's a victim. Caroline is our victim. Right from the early days, we've done live events. Similar to the Singles Club, it's a good opportunity for us to work with bands that we're not necessarily releasing records by, for whatever reason. And it's also a good opportunity for us to see bands play live. Moshi Night is a good place to go to see up-and-coming bands, maybe the next big thing. If you're interested in music and you're interested to know what's happening in music and what's coming up in music, then it's a good place to go to see good new bands. We've just put out a single by a band called Summer Camp, and hopefully following that up with an EP. And we've got singles coming by Signals, who are an amazing band from Leeds, and hopefully Veronica Falls as well.
That was Michael McClatchy from Moshi Moshi Records. They have a reputation, Moshi Moshi Records, for sort of discovering people first.
Well, they've definitely had lots of hits. They've had lots of bands who've
Their strike rate is enormously high, isn't it?
it is. And I think one of the things, you know, I think it's very impressive, but I do absolutely love Moshi Moshi. I just love a lot of bands. And I remember one of the first things I got into through them was because I used to meet Stephen at gigs, and he told me about this band who were, how did he describe them? He said it was basically like four kind of white guys trying their best to be Timbaland but failing spectacularly. And it was Hot Chip. And I've kind of listened to everything on Moshi Moshi since. Mm. I think sometimes you look at their hit rate and you think, can you really like all of this music? Because it's all, there's so many things that go on to be indie kind of successes, you know.
Big successes,
like,
too. Yeah.
And sometimes you think, God, do you really like Kate Nash that much, and, mm. as well as all this other stuff? So, and you maybe get the sense that a lot of the time there's a two-way process, whereas these bands that go on to be big maybe have said, you know, could you put a single out on Moshi Moshi first?
Give it a sort of cachet of indie cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that happens with a lot of labels, not just Moshi Moshi, but I do feel like that is...
But in some ways, that's a nice thing, because at least it means they're not discovering all these bands and then immediately having them pinched by, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Moneybags Records, Inc.
And also, they can afford to put out all these records, and, you know, if they have got a high hit rate, that's great, but if they've got what you're saying is, do you really like all these records? But then if you don't have to sign a band for a whole album and you just want to put a single out,
you might just like one song by them, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's not the same kind of commitment at all.
There's one Kate Nash song I like, mm-hmm. you know. Don't know what point I'm trying to make there. Other than there's one Kate Nash song that I like. 7-inch singles, which is Moshi Moshi's kind of stock in trade, really. Why do you think their appeal continues in this age of digital downloads?
Because the age of digital downloads is the same appeal they have as a record label as standing for songs. Mm. You know, something individual about it rather than albums.
Yeah.
Is the way that you listen to music now on iPods.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Right, okay, so you're saying that there's a sort of reversion almost to the early 60s, the pre sort of rubber soul 60s, when the band's definitive statement was invariably the 7-inch
single.
That's
exactly what I'm saying.
Very good.
Thank you for picking up on it.
Very astute and wise point.
It's the only way to have some value as well, isn't it? You know, to have something like that, your CDs of virtually no value.
No, they're not, are they? The guy I share an office with went out to buy, I think it was Lindstrom and Christabel album or something like that, and it's not been out that long, and he got it in the local record shop for £4, you know, on CD, and you just think, this is, you know what I mean, it doesn't hold any, I'm not saying all CDs should cost £25 or something like that, but it just doesn't hold any value. You can see why people value music a little bit less, I think. And a 7-inch single is just a nice artifact, and there's ever been a nicer thing, you know what I mean, aesthetically, mm-hmm. than a 7-inch single. So good for Moshi Moshi. Good for their 7-inch singles. Good for their relationship with major labels, which all seems very positive. Check out the label's website to find out about buying yearly membership with the label, which gets you every digital release for knockdown prices. Knockdown prices, all important in these recession-struck times. You can find the info at moshimoshimusic, or one word, .com. That is all for this week, I'm afraid. Cheers, Tim. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
I'll leave you to get back to your wedding-related graphic design.
Thank you. I am available for hire.
Don't all rush at once. Thanks, Rosie. Thank you, as ever, for coming in.
You're very welcome.
I'm sorry I was rude about that record.
Oh, it's okay. It's all forgotten now.
Is it?
No.
Trying to trip me up. Give me a mean pinch on the way out of the studio. Thanks, as ever, to our long-suffering producer, Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis. I will see you next week. But as promised, to play us out, here's the wonderful Steve Mason performing Boys Outside.
Cause I tried to go, I tried to last the distance, but I did not have the mental persistence. So we're left here with this barrier of silence, and I won't speak to you, but you won't have it. Oh, am I just a man? Boy out of touch. So I've lost a friend, I've lost a loving partner, and all I have left is silence and the other, silence and the other, silence and the other. Oh, am I just a man in love? Oh, am I just a boy out of touch? Oh, am I just a man in love? Oh, am I just a boy out of touch? Talk about it, yes, I think I want to give it away. More than I talk about it, yes, I think I want to give it away. You came here through mine, and I lost my mind that night. And there's a darkness that persists through all of this. And though I try to keep the light on, it exists. And it's me against the world now more than ever. And my brain says to me that I'm not so clever. Oh, am I just a man in love? Oh, am I just a boy?
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.